Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 80th edition of the On the Ropes Boxing Radio Show. We have a big show in store for you. We're going to have guests Roger Mayweather and Timothy Bradley on. I'd first like to introduce my co-host, Jeff Ciani. Jeff, I hope the July festivities did not take too much out of you.
Enough to prevent me from being on the show here today. How was your weekend, Jenna?
I'd say it was pretty good. A little rough in the morning, but besides that, you know what? I'm looking forward to today's show. I'm looking forward to talking to both Roger and Timothy. I'd first like to start this week's show a little bit different than we normally do. News came out this week that there was a purse bid for the Alexander Povetkin versus Klitschko fight. Klitschko won the purse. That fight seems like it's going to be happening September 18th, and there will be no Klitschko versus Hay fight. That's what it seems like, and for all the boxing fans out there, it's a little bit disappointing because it's the biggest fight that can be made in the heavyweight division. It's one of the biggest fights that can be made in all of boxing, and for whatever reason, it's just not happening. And to be honest, the reason I think it is, it's David Haye, and David Haye being a little bit too greedy. He was offered a 50-50 deal according to Klitschko management. Emmanuel Stewart backs up this, and for whatever reason, he does not want that deal. He seems to be ignoring the Klitschkos by any means necessary, and looking more for a fight, an easier fight, a title defense against Audley Harrison out of the UK. Now, I'm going to go over to you, Remy. We all wanted to see Klitschko versus Haye. Are you a little disappointed that it looks like it's definitely not happening this year and there's some doubt whether it'll happen at all?
Well, yeah, of course I'm disappointed, Jenna, because that's the only fight in the heavyweight division that really makes sense right now. It's the only fight that I think fans would get really excited about. But I'm disappointed, but I'm not all too surprised. And I do think that the fight will happen eventually. Just as you said, unfortunately, it does not appear that it will be this year. With Vladimir, I mean, he's doing what he has to do. Since he can't secure the fight with Hay, he's going to face his number one contender in Povetkin. And as you know, Jenna, we had Povetkin's trainer, Teddy Atlas, on the show recently, and from the best I can gauge from what Teddy was saying, it doesn't even seem like they're that keen to jump on this fight right away. I mean, reading in between the lines about the things Teddy was saying, you know, he said that he wouldn't mind the fight not happening right away, the fight with Klitschko, that is, and that he wouldn't mind having more time to help Povetkin continuing to develop as a fighter before taking that mandatory and that shot at the title. So I get the impression that Teddy doesn't think Povetkin's quite ready for this yet. And the thing with David Haye, I think that what's going on here is I think that Haye, despite all the talking he did to try to land the fight with Klitschko, and then he had the fight with the other Klitschko, and he wound up backing out of both fights, I don't think he particularly wanted either. I don't think at this stage he really wants to fight either Klitschko. I think he knows his chances of beating either of them are very, very slim. I mean, I'd give Haye a puncher's chance maybe against either of them, but that's about it. I mean, I think that either Klitschko at this stage would thoroughly dominate him. I think he knows that. Now that he has the title and he's defended it once, I just think with David Haye, he's going to try to milk that title out as long as he can, and he's going to try to make as much money as he can in the process. And ordinarily, you can't blame a fighter for doing that because boxing is a business first and foremost. But when you consider all the stuff that David Haye has said, all the trash talking he has done, the idea of him potentially fighting Audley Harrison next is beyond disappointing. I mean, that's not a fight. I guess it could make some money over there on the other side of the pond, but it's not a fight that's going to cause waves of excitement throughout the heavyweight division as far as fans are concerned.
No, it certainly is not. And you know what, to be honest, I think when it comes to David Haye, he puts so much value in that trinket and what he can do with it. I mean, everyone knows where the WBA belt came from. It came by Nikolai Volkov. Nikolai Volkov wasn't the real champion at the time. Ruslan Chagaev was. Chagaev was injured. He obviously could not defend his belt, and the vacant belt was picked up by Volkov. And Volkov obviously defended his title against Haye, and Haye ended up, you know, winning a very close decision. Now, when you come to this, it looks like greed, to be honest. That's what it looks like, is greed. If you're getting a 50-50 deal, that's the fight you would want to take. It's all the talk that you've been wanting, is this fight, that type of deal, and you get it, and you don't talk about it, and you ignore it, and you snore the deal and pretend it never happened. That's kind of a situation where it seems like he just wants to milk what he has. Like you said, fighting Audley Harrison, it's a money fight over in the UK. It's, to him, I think, in his opinion, at least from what I perceive, is that he feels that 50-50 deal of Klitschko will be there, you know, it'll be the next fight or after the next fight. He keeps defending his belt and making money elsewhere and protect his title. And, you know, when he's coming down maybe in, you know, his early 30s and Klitschko's still out there, he can take that fight. But it's still very disappointing. I'm going to go back to you, Remy, here. And do you really think that's what he's doing, though? He's just trying to milk more money out of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's no question about that. And like you just said, Jenna, I think he's certainly banking on the fact that there will be a 50-50 deal there, which is about the absolute best that he could ever hope for in a potential fight with Vladimir. I absolutely think he's trying to milk the title out and trying to make as much money as possible before he fights Klitschko, because deep down, I don't believe David Haye believes he could beat Klitschko. I don't believe he thinks he could win. If he believed he could win, I think he would certainly be interested in this fight. I think he would certainly be looking into making it happen. And I think if he actually really wanted the fight, he could have made it happen. Now, it was on the table. It could have happened. But he's looking for a little bit of an easier route right now, and he wants to, you know, help hype it up bigger and make as much money as he can in the meantime, because if he loses to Klitschko, he loses everything he's built up in terms of name, reputation, and recognition in the heavyweight division, which is largely something that's bigger than life over on the other side of the pond, but it's not something that I don't think that people are overly excited about David Haye over here in the United States. And, you know, it reminds me of when Haye fought John Ruiz in his last fight, and I was absolutely shocked to hear some of the commentators saying, not since Muhammad Ali have we seen a fighter with this kind of speed. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, he's pretty fast, but didn't these guys see a Larry Holmes or a Prime Tyson? I mean, he's not the fastest fighter since Ali. I think that just goes to show you how big the British fans are about this guy, and I think that they're the only ones that are that big on him. And I think that he really does know that the Klitschko brothers pose too big a threat for him. They're too big, they're too strong, and they're too consistent at what they do for somebody like David Haye, I believe, to really have a chance to get on the inside. And Haye not taking the fight, I think, is evidence of that. that's why he wants to fight somebody that's not going to be perceived as much of a threat at all in Audley Harrison. I mean, I think that there's no way around the fact that if Hay believed he could really beat a Klitschko, that fight would be happening this year. It's not happening this year. I think that tells the whole story right there, Jenna.
Yeah, I mean, Audley Harrison is an easy money fight. You don't have to pay Audley as much. He can make more money. He can take a bigger cut, and it'll make money overseas. And, you know, that's good enough for him. You know, he can cash in on that fight there. But, you know, like all fighters, you know, best laid plans. Buster Douglas went in there against Mike Tyson. That kind of stuff can happen. And you know what? I'll be cheering Barry Forrest after this. You know what? Any fighter can land a shot. He is 38 years old. I don't think it'll happen. But, you know, I'll be cheering for him because if anyone doesn't deserve to fight the Klitschkos now, I think it's David Hay. I'm going to take a caller right now. Area code 631. You are on the ropes. 631. 631 is obviously a shy David Hay fan, but yeah, I mean, overall, it's very disappointing, but let's change it up a little bit there, and let's talk about Povetkin versus Klitschko. Now, the purse bid was won by K2 Promotions. They bid an extraordinary amount of money. It was $8.3 million to win it, and obviously 75% goes to champ, 25% goes to challenger. Povetkin's getting $2 million for it. Do you think Povetkin his fight will actually fall through and happen? Because we have seen a Povetkin fight be set up with Klitschko before, and Povetkin actually pull out of an injury. Do you think this will actually make it to the fight date?
I think that it probably will. I mean, anything can happen. So just because it's going to purse bid doesn't necessarily mean that the fight will 100% happen. And I'd like to believe that Vladimir is still holding hope that he can lure David Hay to the table if they could work out the circumstances to do something like that. I think the fight with Povetkin and Klitschko probably will happen. I think that Povetkin and Teddy Atlas realize that even though Povetkin could probably use some more work, there are only so many chances in life you get at the biggest title in the world. And I think that it would be a bad move by them to let this opportunity slip away, even if it is a little bit premature. I think that they're going to have to jump on it. And Teddy Atlas even said as much on our show a few weeks back when he said, you know, but if it does come to that, if it does come to Povetkin versus Klitschko, because he'd mentioned, you know, that Klitschko was still trying to get the Hay fight at the time. He said if it comes to that, he knows the game plan to beat Klitschko. He said he's going to have to make sure that Povetkin understands that plan, and he said that they're going to have to go out there and do their best job to execute that plan, and Teddy said he'll do everything in his power to get his guy ready to try and win this fight, and I have no doubt that Teddy Atlas will do everything in his power to get Povetkin ready, and by all accounts I've heard, Povetkin is a great student of the sport, and he will do the necessary things he has to in order to best prepare himself at this point. I don't think Povetkin's quite ready, but on the other side, I'm not sure that he ever will be ready. I think that the opportunity is there now. Anything could happen in boxing. I think Teddy will come up with a smart game plan. I don't think it'll be enough, but I think they have to make that happen, and I do think that's the fight we'll most likely see by the end of the year. But in boxing, Jenny, as you well know, anything could happen, and nothing is really set in stone until we actually see it unfold before our eyes.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, I at least I'll be looking forward to seeing this matchup here because, you know, it's Povetkin is a former gold medalist. He is a former, you know, he does have a good amateur background. I think he'll give a good account of himself. I think, you know, with Teddy Atlas, he would have done much better now than he would have done a few years ago when he had a chance before. So no matter what, even though the Hay fight's not happening, I am looking forward to seeing Klitschko back in the ring against Povetkin. But anyways, change things up. There was some other news that came out this past week, and that was former OTR guest Sugar Shane Mosley will be returning to the ring September 18th against former junior middleweight titleist Sergio Mora. Now, this fight's actually going to take place at 154 pounds, and according to Richard Schaefer, it will also be on pay-per-view in a 12-round fight. Remy, what do you think of this matchup?
Well, my feelings on Shane, I basically made them known after the fight he had with Floyd Mayweather Jr. And Shane Mosley always prided himself in wanting to fight the best throughout his career and to take on the toughest challenges available. And sometimes that mentality worked against him. It worked against his own best interests. He struggled twice with Vernon Forrest. He struggled twice with Winky Wright. He had the close loss to Cotto. And then the last time around, he fought arguably the number one or at least number two fighter in the world in Floyd Mayweather. And he had an opportunity early, and he wound up being thoroughly outclassed. And I think that shows that Shane really is at a level right now where he's probably not going to be able to compete against the very best. But when you're in there with Floyd Mayweather, it really is difficult to gauge how much a fighter has left. And in Mosley's case, you know, it could be a matter of Floyd being all wrong for Shane. And, you know, maybe Shane has a little bit more left to offer than we realize from that fight. Maybe he was having trouble making 147 at this point. The interesting thing that you mentioned about this fight being at 154 against Sergio Mora is that Shane historically has not been known as something especially special at 154 pounds, unlike 147, where he was much more of a force to be reckoned with. I think, though, that the fight makes sense. If Shane is going to continue to fight, I think Mora is the type of guy that will let us see and gauge how much Shane does have left to offer at a top level. I mean, it's obviously he can't beat a guy like Floyd Mayweather, but maybe there are other guys out there that he can beat. Maybe this move back to 154, if Shane's going to decide to keep it going a few more fights, this will give us a good idea of what he has left. There's, of course, the Sergio Mora former two-time Shane Conqueror Vernon Forrest. So the fight is interesting. I'm not sure that it's really a pay-per-view worthy event, especially in light of the fact that Shane lost so one-sidedly and so handily against Floyd Mayweather Jr. So I'm not sure that a lot of fans are going to be too eager to buy that. But I'm curious to see what Shane has left, if indeed he is going to fight, which obviously now it appears that he is. So whatever Shane has left, the Mora fight should give us some clue. So in that sense, I am very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, if this is going to be a pay-per-view event, though, I mean, you're really going to have to couple some other fights, because if Mora versus Mosley is your main event, that ain't going to sell too many pay-per-views. I mean, Sergio Mora, I think it's a good fight, though, for Mosley, because Sergio Mora, last time he made 154 pounds, looked like a corpse. I mean, he cannot healthily make that weight. He will take this fight here for the money, but to be honest, I don't think he'll be able to make the weight well. I think he'll struggle just like he did the second time against Forrest, and I think Mosley will have a pretty easy night, and to be honest, I think he could even knock out Sergio Mora. I would not be surprised. But overall, it's a good fight for him. I think the move up in weight is really the only decision he can make at this point here. At 147, the top guys, like you said, Mayweather, Pacquiao, I don't think he could fare too well, but to be honest, there is one fight out there at 154 he could fare well at. I think a rematch with Cotto, he could do well. I'd like to see that. That's what I'm hoping can happen after this fight here, and hopefully that's what this can set up. But anyways, guys, it's time for our first guest of this week's show. We have WBO light welterweight champion Timothy Bradley. How's it going today, Tim?
Oh, it's going pretty well. A little tired right now, just coming from training, but it's going really well right now.
That's good. Now, speaking of training, how has your training camp gone for your July 17th bout with Luis Carlos Abregu?
It's been a tough training camp. A couple of, 7 pounds added onto the weight. It's just been, tough sparring against these big guys and having these, big 6-foot guys coming in there and beating up on me. So it's been kind of tough, dealing with the style. But, it's towards the end of the training camp now, so I'm able to deal with them a lot easier now than before. And, tough rounds, man, really tough rounds in the gym, sparring rounds. So I'm feeling really confident about the fight and the amount of work that I've been doing. I've also incorporated some strength training, and so I'm feeling a lot stronger in the ring. So I'm looking forward to having a dominant performance July 17th.
Now, you said you feel a lot stronger in the ring. Obviously, as you mentioned, you're moving up to 147 pounds. Do you think you'll have more power at this weight class?
I'm hoping. A lot of my sparring partners ain't sitting in front of me, so, they're moving and, they're feeling that pop on the end of my shots. So, hopefully I'll have a little bit more power. I would think I would, with the added 7 pounds and not having to, suck down all of the water I have to do when I'm making 140. So I'm very excited. I'm very excited about it. I'm very comfortable with this weight.
All right, now your opponent, Luis Costa Brugu, he's 29-0, 23 knockouts. What have you seen from him, and what do you expect from him in the ring?
You know, he's a tough guy. He comes to fight, you know, great stamina, good right hand, great uppercut, right uppercut, you know. He's really aggressive in the ring. He got a new trainer now, so it looks like he's starting to box a little bit more, use his distance and stuff. But, you know, I think he lacks in big fight experience. You know, he is a bigger guy than I am. So, but I just feel like I'll be able to use my skills and my experience to dominate the fight.
Now, you said you'd use your skills and your experience. What other things do you think you'll have to use to be successful against him?
My jab. My jab is the key. You know, if I can isolate him with my jab, you know, out jab the bigger guy, I feel I'll give him a lot of problems. I'll keep him off balance. You know, he won't know when to come in. You know, I can follow up my right hand or my left hook. So the jab is the key to winning this fight.
Now, the reason that you've taken this bout was because you had two previous bouts scheduled with Marcus Maidana, and for whatever reason, he's claiming manager problems that fight did not happen. But do you think this move up to 147 is happening a lot earlier than you expected it would?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that, you know, the only time I'll probably go up to 147 pounds was either to face like a fighter in Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather. But, you know, I'm looking to make this leap up there and just, you know, test myself. And just, you know, open up other doors. You know, if the boxing fans, the boxing public see me do well at 147 pounds, they're going to say, well, you know, there should be any excuses for this guy not to get a shot at the best fighters in the world. You know, there's a lot of options, and there's a lot more money at 47 than there is at 140. Even though there is a lot of competition still left at 140, you know, I'm still able to go up or either down to face all these competitions. And I want all these fights. I love to fight Devin Alexander and Marcus Maidana, and I would love to fight Amir Khan, Victor Ortiz, you know, guys like that. These guys are, you know, young fighters who are looking to make a name for themselves, and I would love to be in a mix with them.
Great. Well, Tim, we're also joined by my co-host, Jeff Ciani. Jeff?
Hey, Tim, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Hey, thank you. Thanks again, man, for bringing me back, man. I really enjoy this. Thank you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Now, as far as you saying that the fight's at 147, that there's potentially more money there, and that there's still some good fights at 140, but at 147, what's the fight you'd most like to get if you can test the waters here and if everything goes according to plan?
You know, they've been talking to me about Andre Berto. They've been talking to me about Shane. You know, obviously the big fights, the big money fights would be against, you know, Manny Pacquiao or Floyd. If they can't work anything out, they're going to need some dance partners. So, you know, any of these guys would be great fights at 147. At 140, you know, as I just said, there's a lot of talent there as well. You know, it's just I feel that at this moment it just needs a little bit more time to develop. You know, maybe Khan can fight a couple more fights. Devin can fight a couple more fights and really get our names really blown up to where, you know, we'd be fighting for big mega bucks.
So would it be accurate to say then, Timothy, that this is a deal where you intend to not just stay at 147, that you tend to go back and forth between the divisions if necessary to go where the fights you want are?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when I come out of this fight successfully, you know, I would want to definitely consider fighting at 140 possibly after this fight, maybe facing Marcos Maidana. And then, you know, if a big fight at 47 was to happen, then, I'll go up and fight, you know, either Andre Berto or fight against, Manny or Floyd or even Shane. So, you know, there's a lot of options out there for myself. I just have to take care of business on the 17th, and then we'll explore and we'll see what will be our next move. I'll sit down with my promoters and my manager, and we'll talk.
Now, Timothy, you've been down before in your career, and you've obviously gotten back up off the canvas to win. Are you at all worried that the guys up at 147 might be a little bit too powerful for you?
No, I'm never worried about that. You know, I'm pretty much, I've been in the ring and I just fight. You know, I don't really worry about the power or anything like that. I have a lot of skill. So, you know, if he lands a big shot on me, if he doesn't hurt me, then it's going to be a long night for him. But if he does, then, you know, it's part of boxing. You know, you can't really worry about, you know, being knocked down or possibly being knocked out. You know, those are negative things that you got to get out of your head before you even get into the ring. So I don't really think about that at all. He can't hit with what's not there, what's not sitting in front of him. So if I'm not there to be hit, then I think I'll be all right.
Okay. Going back to what you said before, you mentioned Shane Mosley and Andre Berto as possible opponents for you, perhaps on the horizon at 147. Which one of those two, given the choice, would you rather fight? And why?
I would rather fight Andre. I think Andre Berto would be a great fight. Andre Berto would be a great fight due to the fact that we came up in the amateurs together, you know. And Andre Berto is a good friend of mine. You know, we speak all the time. You know, we're always, you know, in conjunction talking about, you know, our next our preparation and, you know, things like that. So he knows a lot about me, and I know a lot about him. But you know, this is business. And, you know, we have to put our friendship aside, you know, to make this fight happen. But I think stylistically, it's a heck of a fight. You know, the boxing fans, they seem that they're leading towards Andre Berto due to the fact that, you know, he's a lot bigger, he's a bigger puncher, and you know, things like that. But, you know, they got to see what I could do at 47 first before they even judge me. So, you know, but I would rather fight probably Andre Berto than Shane Mosley right now. Because Andre is the younger, and he's the hottest guy. If I fight Sugar Shane, you know, he's coming off a big loss with Floyd Mayweather. So, you know, I'd rather fight the undefeated fighter. I think it would be more recognition.
All right. Now, Tim, speaking of the 147-pound division, the talk of boxing and the talk of all the fans is will it or will it not, and that's the fight between Mayweather versus Pacquiao. Do you think it'll happen?
That fight will never happen. I don't think that fight will ever happen due to the fact that, you know, these guys, you know, Mayweather wants certain things a certain way. Manny wants things a certain way. You know, both of these guys are at the top of their game. It's going to be hard to negotiate a fight like that unless Floyd either takes 50-50 or, you know, Pac-Man either agreed to the drug testing. I'm not sure what's going on right now with that fight, you know, because they've been really disclosed about it. But, you know, I don't think that fight's going to ever happen due to the fact of the type of camps and, you know, the way these guys, you know, take their fights, man, and the contract. So, you know, I hope the fight happens, but, you know, more than likely, it's been too long for that fight not to happen, and I think it's going to continue on to be that way. So,
let's say they put their differences aside and this bout does take place. Who would you pick?
Floyd Mayweather. All day. Floyd Mayweather. I think Floyd be able to isolate Pac-Man. He's a smaller guy. Even though Pac-Man throws a lot of punches, I think Floyd would be able to isolate with his movement, good jabs, stiff, you know, stiff combinations, punching in between. You know, at times, Manny can get a little wild. I think Floyd is smart enough to make him pay in between. So I would pick Floyd Mayweather all day.
Now, speaking of Floyd Mayweather, your name has come up as a possible next opponent for him if a fight with Pacquiao does not happen. How do you think it would fare against the pound-for-pound top guy in the sport?
Wow, that'd be a dream come true. I mean, you know, when I first started my professional career, you know, I said that if Floyd was still fighting by the time I get up in the top seeds, I said I'll be the first man to beat him. But, you know, there's a lot of speculation on the fight that they may face me. But, you know, nothing's really solid right now. But, you know, I just feel like I know him so well. I know him so well, you know. I grew up in watching him, you know, especially when I started my professional career. I was watching Floyd Mayweather, you know, before I even started my professional career. You know, I idolized him a lot. I looked at a lot of things that he likes to do. I know, you know, when he's trying to step his right hand. I know when he's trying to step his left hook. I just know him really well. It's just the fact that getting in the ring, in that big crowd, a big stage, and, you know, you realize you're fighting the best fighter in the world, you know, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough. Mentally, I have to be, you know, prepare myself, you know, tremendously to get in the ring with that guy.
Now, Timothy, going back to 140 pounds for a minute here, when we had Freddie Roach on the show not long after Amir Khan had beaten Paulie Malignaggi, we were asking him about potential fights for Khan, and Roach said something to the effect, well, we could let Bradley and Alexander fight, and we'll fight the winner. Do you think that Khan is really interested in fighting you or even Alexander at this stage in his career?
I know Alexander is. He's made it aware, you know, on several occasions. We're going back and forth, you know, through the press, you know, between camps and stuff. So some bad things they said about me, you know, and, you know, saying that I'm scared. And I'm like, dude, I'm a fighter. I'm a fighter, man. I'm not scared of no man, you know. It's like, you know, I just said, you know, there's a business part of boxing as well that the fans don't really realize. You know, any fighter will fight any fighter, but there's a business side to boxing as well. So, you know, we got to think about that. We got to think about that as well, you know. But I think Khan, on the other hand, right now, I think that Freddie, great matchmaker. He's a great matchmaker. And right now I think that he feels that Khan is not ready yet to get in the ring with me at this moment. But sooner or later, as he picks his fights, you know, and getting different styles of things, kind of be ready, you know, once he's grooming him into where he wants him to be, then Freddie will call me out. He will, you know, but I think they're trying to build a little bit more. And, you know, I don't knock anybody. I don't knock anybody's plan, you know, but, you know, sooner or later we're going to get it on anyway. So it's just a matter of time. Everything's about timing.
Now talking about timing and something you mentioned a moment ago when you said that Devin Alexander has had some things to say about you. If the timing was right and the terms for a fight with him are right, would you like the fight, and how satisfying would it be to get the chance to you know, kind of get a little payback for some of the things that he has said?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a fight that I want. I want that fight so bad. You know, my promoters are right now the ones that are holding me back. They're just like, dude, that's a huge fight. You know, it's for, you know, three of the, you know, alphabetical belts. You know, we definitely have to be taken care of, no doubt.
Just changing things up a tiny bit, Timothy, I'm just curious, have you been following the Super Six? And if so, what do you think of it so far?
I've been following the Super Six. I think, you know, I called it from day one that Andre Ward was going to win the whole thing. You know, he's looking really sharp right now. I grew up with that guy in amateurs, but you know, I'm watching it. I was, you know, a little disappointed in Allen Green and the way he came to fight. I thought he could have fought a better fight than that, you know. But other than that, all the fighters, you got Andre Durrell that's still, you know, the Durrell and Andre Durrell and Andre Ward is going to be facing off, and I'm excited to see that fight and see how that fight develops. You know, you still got Carl Froch in there, you know, Kessler. These guys are the top guys in the division, and I'm amazed in seeing these guys, you know, go at one another. You know, I think I said that, like, you know, the loser of the division is this is like the type of tournament that either make you or break you. You know, you get a couple of losses under your belt, you know, I mean, it can hurt your career. You know, if you win the whole thing, then man, you're the man. So it's you know, that tournament's tough. It's a tough tournament, and I'm liking what I'm seeing, man. Showtime's doing a good job with that tournament.
There was some talk of a tournament like that somewhere in your weight range, and I'm wondering if something like that came about at 140 or 147, would you be interested in participating in something like that? And do you think it's practical that something like that could be made in that weight range?
Yes and no. Yes and no, due to the fact that, you know, if we all had the same promoter, then definitely, but, you know, we don't all have the same promoter, and we all don't have the same goals in mind. But, you know, in any kind of business, you know, things can be negotiated to where we could make this happen. But I think that, you know, it's going to be some people are going to be like, oh, well, we don't like that, we don't like this, you know, and it might not happen. But I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I think a tournament would be great for boxing, especially for the 140 division, because we got a lot of young talent there, and I'm all for it.
Now, Tim, you had brought up Devin Alexander before, and
mm-hmm.
He actually has a fight coming up August 7th against Kantilnik. How do you see that fight going?
Devin by unanimous decision. I think Devin would be too quick for Kantilnik. Kantilnik's a straight-up fighter. Good defense, you know, very disciplined with his punches. But I just think that Devin, just, you know, being a crafty lefty, you know, fast cat-like reflexes, I just think that he'll be able to overcome in this fight.
All right. Now, you know, your last five fights have been title fights. Now, this fight here, there's nothing on the line. It's a fight at 147. Do you think you're going to bring any type of a different mentality into the ring?
No, this fight is for the title. You know, this fight is for, you know, a lot of recognition at 147 pounds. You know, it feels like it's a 12-round fight. You know, it is a title fight to me. So there's nothing different that I'm going to, you know, bring to the ring. I'm going to the ring like it's my last fight, you know, and this guy's in my way to getting where I want to be. So I got to just go in there and seek and destroy. Just take him out any way necessary. You know, a lot of people, you know, want to have a, you know, dominating performance or want to look impressive doing it. Me, I don't have that mentality. I don't put that type of stress on my mind because, you know, that can you can try to look good and not look good at all. But, you know, I just like to go in there and fight my fight and just win any way necessary. Whether it's a knockout, if a knockout happened, I'm ready to go 12 rounds, 12 hard rounds, and I'm going to get it any way necessary. So that's the type of mentality I take for my fights.
Now, Tim, speaking of the sport as a whole, how do you gauge its level of success right now compared, you know, where it was years back with, you know, obviously you have Mayweather, you have Pacquiao, you have those type of stars, but do you think boxing's healthy now?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's a new era moving in, and, you know, I think that, you know, you with the Andre the Worlds and the Andre Wards and, you know, there's a lot of young talent out there that's starting to turn professionally right now. I think there's a new era, you know, myself coming up, Andre Berto, all these guys I grew up in, you know, for the 04, you know, Olympic trials. You know, it's a new era moving in, and I think a lot of these guys are going to be fighting, facing one another. You know, I love that Paul Williams and Martinez fight. That was an awesome fight. You know, the Floyd Mayweather Mosley fight was an awesome fight to me. I thought that was great for boxing. You know, the Manny Pacquiao Kaladi fight was great. You know, but I think boxing is back on the scene, you know. And in the near future, I think a lot of these fighters are going to be facing one another. You know, like the 140 division is very hot with young talent. And I see something happening like, you know, when Leonard and Duran and Hearns and, you know, and Hagler, you know, when they had their 2 or 3 fights, you know, I see something happen like that in the near future, you know, with all these top 140s.
Now, Tim, what is your ultimate goal for the rest of 2010 and beyond?
My ultimate goal is to stay undefeated. That's my ultimate goal, stay undefeated, you know, and eventually I want to capture a welterweight championship. that's my ultimate goals right now. If I can maintain and stay undefeated this year, 2011 would be a huge year for me, because then I think I'll have a lot more options and a lot more people want to fight me.
All right, final two questions. You fight against Abregu on the 17th of July. How do you see it going? Final prediction.
I see it as a boxing lesson. You know, I have the tools to outbox this guy, and. You know, I'm not going in there looking for a knockout. I'm not going to go in there and get reckless because this guy's a dangerous puncher. So I'm looking for, a great boxing night, you know, just using my skills, using my abilities, you know, and my advantages, my speed. And, you know, hopefully I can catch him. Hopefully I can catch him over the top or underneath or something. You know, this guy has been down before. I've been down before. And, you know, I think whoever lands the biggest punch and lands it right on the button is going to go down.
Final question, Tim. Is there anything you want to say to all the fans listening out there and your fans?
All my fans out there, thank you. Thank you guys so much for just, you know, just following me and believing in me. I'm continuing to just do my best out there. Thank God for, you know, just giving me this opportunity once again. Thank you guys for putting me on. And, hey, stay tuned. HBO, July 17th is going to be my debut on HBO. So, very excited about that, and look out for me, everybody at 147 as well, as 140. Look out for me. All right.
Well, Tim, it was an absolute pleasure getting to talk to you again. We wish you the best of luck on July 17th, and we thank you again for your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, you guys have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. That was Timothy Bradley, telling it like it is. You think his trip up to 147 pounds? Rummy, what do you think?
Well, that was the second time we've had Tim on the show, and I think he's a great guy. I think he's a good fighter. I think he's a very well-spoken young man. I think he's a very talented fighter with a bright future ahead of him still. Whether or not 147 is going to become a more permanent home for him than 140, I'm not so sure. I mean, Bradley's an exciting fighter. He throws a lot of combinations. He's got great speed. Over the course of last year, he had fights with Kendall Holt. He had the fight with Peterson. I think that throughout the course of the year, he showed a lot of improvement. He also fought the Nate Campbell fight that was ruled a no contest then. But I think that Bradley is a tremendous talent. The one thing that seems to be lacking from Bradley's arsenal is one-punch knockout power. And I think that if he had something like that, if he had a little more pop in his punches, I think that he could almost be the complete package. As far as his move to 147, I expect him to outbox Abregu, and I think that he will. I do wonder, though, whether his what's best for him on the horizon isn't still at the 140-pound division, where even though he doesn't have a lot of knockouts, I think his punch has some pop to it, and he throws good combinations, and I think that that weight might be better suited for him at this point in time. At the same time, I understand the allure of him trying to move to 147 pounds with potential big-money fights that'll earn him more than any of these guys at 140. But with the talented, rich 140-pound division, I think I'd ultimately like to see Timmy matching up against some of the best guys there. But it'll be interesting to see how he does in his next fight, and it'll be more interesting to see where that leads him, whether it leads him back down to 140, maybe a fight against Devin Alexander eventually, or, you know, if the fight between Pacquiao and Mayweather, of course, doesn't work out, as you mentioned before, Jenna, you know, that Mayweather fight is something that could happen for Bradley. It'll be interesting to see where his future lies in the near horizon, whether it will be at 140 or whether this move to 147 will be something that's more permanent. But as far as having Timmy on the show, I think he's a great guy. I think he's a great fighter, and I definitely hope to get a chance to speak to him again sometime in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And this move up to 147, though, is pretty interesting because he's not very big. I mean, he's not a very big, to be honest, he's not a very big 140-pound fighter. He's only 5'6". So going up to welterweight is interesting. I'll be curious how he goes. You know, this is the right fight for him at this weight class. It'll be interesting how he does. Abregu is a tall guy. He's generally what you would see as a normal 147-pound fighter, but it'll be interesting. I mean, like we talked with him about the fight with Mayweather, that possibly could happen. That's why he's probably taking this fight here. It sets him up, you know, that, you know, he's fought this weight before and that he could potentially take that matchup. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. See how he handles that power and see if he gains any power this weight class. But as for guests, Timmy is an absolute great guest. I loved having him on. Two times we've had him on, he's doing great interviews. And like I said, I hope we get him back sometime. But changing things up and back to the news of boxing that came up this past week, it appears that Lucien Boutte will not be fighting Bernard Hopkins. That was a rumored fight that HBO was trying to spell before, and it was a fight that was actually going to have to take place at a catch weight, somewhere around 170 pounds. It more looks like he's going to be fighting Jesse Brinkley, who is his mandatory challenger on October 15th. Rummy, you're a fan of Super 6. You're a fan of Super Middleweight Division. What do you think of this matchup for Boutte?
Well, I guess since he's not part of the Super 6, there really isn't a whole lot out there for him. I mean, personally, I'd have been much more interested in seeing what he would do against Bernard Hopkins. And I know last week, Jenna, that was a fight that I had asked Andre Ward about, that hypothetically, if Boutte were to face somebody like Hopkins, what Ward had thought. And, you know, to me, that fight is a lot more interesting than a fight with Brinkley. And I guess it's just, you know, it's another point that Andre Ward brought up is that, you know, you asked him once before, Jen, it was before he'd even fought Green. You said, does the winner of the Super 6 have to fight Lucien Boutte to prove he's the best super middleweight in the world? And Andre Ward said, no, I think it's the other way around. Lucien Bute needs to fight the winner of the Super 6 in order to prove that he's the best super middleweight in the world. And I think that all relates into what's going on here, because fight after fight, these guys, Ward, Durrell, Frotch, Kessler, Abraham, all of them, they're fighting time and time again top-notch competition, whereas I don't mean to disrespect some of Bute's recent opponents like Andrade or Edison Miranda or even Brinkley coming up, because Brinkley, we've had him on the show in the past, Jenna. He had a heroically good effort against Curtis Stevens his last going, where he surprised a lot of people, myself included. He had a great effort there, but at the same time, you know, Bute has to stay busy, wait for the dust to settle in the Super 6 and do what he needs to do, but it's a bit disappointing in a way, because, I mean, again, no disrespect meant towards Jesse Brinkley. I think he's a tough kid. I think he's a decent fighter. But when you look at these elite guys, they are all in the Super 6 tournament, which doesn't leave much for Bute out there. And as you mentioned, he's a mandatory and whatnot, but I'm disappointed. Being that we don't know what's going on with Bernard Hopkins right now, I'd have much preferred to see Bute versus Hopkins. I think that if Bute really wants to make a case for himself as being the best super middleweight, that would have been a better avenue of approach for him rather than this while he's waiting for the Super 6 dust to settle, because, frankly, I don't think anybody is expecting Brinkley to beat Bute. I think that people are more or less going to view this as a give-me fight for Bute. And again, for the third time, no disrespect meant to Brinkley, but Bute is not making a strong case for himself here. I think that he could be doing more to keep his name on the level of the guys in the Super 6, and I think this just kind of further pushes him into the shadow of the Super 6, or at least that it should, because while these guys are continuously squaring off against the best, he's not.
Yeah, you know, I agree there. I mean, it is mandatory challenge. He wants to keep his belt. He has to fight this fight. But to be honest, if you want to make a bigger name for yourself and make more of a case for you fighting, you know, top guys in the sport, if you want to say you throw your name at the top of the Super 6, yeah, should fight a guy like Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins, you know, he's a former middleweight champion. He's a former light heavyweight champion. He's got a lot of name recognition. It'd be a great fight to get out to the American press. It'd be a great fight to actually have in America. And, you know, it's just, you know, this fight right here, Brinkley is a tough guy. He'll give all he has. I don't think he stands any chance at all, to be honest, against Bute. Hopkins would have been able to go the full distance. He would have made it a close fight. Probably an ugly fight, but a close fight, and really tested Bute. Now, people out there that are big fans of Lucien Bute, and they like to rate him above Andre Ward, you have to look at who he's fought. The best guy that has best win on Bute's record is against Andrade. You know, he has one very close fight, which some people believe he should have lost, and then he has a dominant win. Now, Andrade is the guy that Kessler dominated, and we all know that Kessler got dominated by Ward. Now, style fake fight doesn't mean that's going to happen if Ward versus Bute happens, but to be honest, if you look at resumes, Bute still has a lot to prove at this weight class, and I believe this fight doesn't prove anything. He should take a fight to stay busy. He should try to keep his belt. But to be honest, I think a fight with Bernard Hopkins would have been a better choice for him. I don't know. Rami, do you think, you know, a fight with Bernard Hopkins, if he had won it and took that fight and won it, would have given him some sort of clout over some of the guys in Super 6?
I still don't think, you know, that's tough, Jenna. Bernard Hopkins is a ring legend. He won his last fight against Roy Jones, but in his last fight against Jones, I believe that he started showing some signs of Father Time finally catching up with him. Even though he won the fight, even though he dominated the fight, there were certain aspects of the fight with Bernard Hopkins getting punched behind the head, needing to take a long break, and it didn't appear to me as if it was an act job to catch his breath or anything like that. I think that Hopkins was seriously getting hurt by shots like that that, granted, were illegal, but that might not have had that type of impact on him in younger years, and I'm a little cautious about where Hopkins is right now, so I think that the answer to your question would depend on the type of fight that unfolded. If Bute dominated Hopkins, there's always the possibility that Bernard Hopkins, you know, is old. I mean, he is old, so there's going to be people that would discredit that win there anyway. But the way I'm looking at it is, if he wins a close fight with Hopkins, if he's able to outslick the old veteran in some way or another in a close competitive fight, because I think no matter what, it would be a close and competitive fight that would go 12. And at worst, I think Hopkins loses a close one. I just think fighting Hopkins, period, does a lot more for Boutte, period, than fighting Jesse Brinkley. So I guess in that sense, does it keep him on par with the guys in the Super Six? I'm not sure. I guess it depends on what the fans perceive Hopkins had left after the fight. So it isn't totally fair to Boutte in that regard, that it might be easy for fans to say afterward, well, Hopkins was old, Hopkins was shot, whatnot, whether or not it's true. But it definitely gives him a better case to fight Hopkins than it does to fight Brinkley, to stay with these guys in the Super Six, who whoever is going to win the Super Six ultimately has to fight three more fights. I don't know. The Brinkley fight is a bit disappointing for me as a fan. I know a lot of people are big on Boutte. I know there's a lot of hype surrounding Lucien Boutte these days. I think a lot of it is misguided, to be sure. I think he's a fantastic talent. I think he's a great fighter. But I think he is being a bit overrated by a lot of guys out there. I think that the Super Six is where the elite competition is right now. And, you know, I don't know if Boutte is ever going to be able to find his way in until the dust settles, especially not by fighting guys like Jesse Brinkley.
I know, I definitely agree with you there. But anyways, it is time for our final guest of this week's episode. He is the head trainer for Floyd Mayweather Jr. He is none other than Roger Mayweather. How are things going today, Roger?
Everything's fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine. We're happy to have you back on the show. I'd first like to ask you, your nephew had an amazing performance when he fought Sugar Shane Mosley. How do you rate it?
I already knew he was going to whoop his ass, because it wasn't that new to me. I know, because I trained a guy that beat him four times. Skill pay the bills. That's it. So you start talking about Floyd Mosley against Floyd against Shane. I mean, he had the performance he posed to have against a guy of that nature.
Yeah. Did you think he would fight in that style coming forward against Shane Mosley?
Yep. Once, let me tell you something. The number one, the fight was basically, far as skill-wise and boxing ability, my nephew boxed too good for him anyway. So I was never worried about him outboxing Shane Mosley. But the thing of it was, only thing that was concerned with me was what he had in his system. The minute they tested him for them steroid, and he came out negative, I knew how the fight was going to be from the beginning. I know, because I had a guy that beat him four times.
Yeah.
So it wasn't nothing new, actually, to me.
Now, were you at all worried in the second round when Shane stunned Floyd?
Well, I mean, Floyd obviously ain't never been put down. But I mean, he can take a shot, even though he's going up in weight class. Shane Mosley caught him with a good shot. But anytime you fight another talented fighter, those things happen. I mean, if you take one of the greatest heavyweights ever, Ali been on the ground about four or five times, but he still find a way to win, and that's what the key about boxing is, finding a way to win.
Yeah, and certainly did overcome that. It was a great performance by Floyd, and it's one that opened a lot of people's eyes. Now, everyone's talking now in boxing about the matchup they all want to see. And we talked, last time we talked to you, we talked to you about it. And that was a matchup with Manny Pacquiao. Do you think it will happen?
I don't see why it won't happen. Anytime a guy getting $50 million don't want to fight, that tells you something about him. How would a guy turn down that kind of money? Why would he turn down that kind of money? Remember, he said he was going to fight for it. But the only thing with him, he want to fight Floyd, but he don't want to take the test. He don't want to take a test. So what does that tell you? If a guy don't want to take a test, he getting $50 million, then that already tell you what, he must got something wrong with him. I know he ain't crazy. Anytime a guy don't, first off, all fighters take tests. All fighters take tests. They take drug tests, HIV tests. They take them tests anyway. But here's a guy, he say, oh, I don't want to take the test a couple of days before the fight. He want to take the test. He take the test, and then he want to take the test, but he don't want to take it a couple of days before the fight. Well, that's generally how you take tests anyway. So why is it that a guy getting this kind of money? Remember, he knocked out dudes that Floyd went the distance with. He knocked out Ricky Hatton. He knocked out De La Hoya. He struggled with Marquez. But let's see. Here's a guy knocked out guys that Floyd didn't knock out. But yet, he worried about taking the test. I know he worried about taking the test. And that's what the sport's about.
So you don't think there's any validity to the thing that he just has a fear of needles?
He got a fear of needles, huh? He got a fear of needles. I mean, well, how do you take an HIV test? You need a needle, right?
Yeah.
You need a needle to take an HIV test. And he had to take an HIV test before because he wouldn't be allowed to box in the state of Nevada. You see? So all that about he don't want to take a test and he fear of needles, boom, boom. Well, how are they going to take your blood then if you fear needles?
I'm with you there, but, you know, the talk of the negotiations for this is having a certain cutoff date, and this is something you brought up, that he only wants to take it a few days before. Do you think it'll be, if the fight does happen, do you think it'll be straight testing, or do you think there'll be a cutoff date?
Well, I believe it's going to be a cutoff date because, number one, a guy ain't going to take no test no week before no fight, and then don't take a test right after the fight. I believe they're going to do Olympic-style testing. Olympic-style testing, they test you randomly like that. But it's not a big thing. If he don't got shit in the system, why do you worry about being tested anyway? Only time a person fear about being tested because they got something in them that they ain't supposed to have in them. That's it. Because to be honest, it ain't in a million years. In a million years, he would never whoop Floyd, period. Floyd take a test. I mean, why? Floyd don't mind taking a test. He didn't take a couple of days before Shane Mosley fought. What's the problem? But that's what you do as a fighter anyway. That's what you do as a fighter. You take a test a couple of days before the fight, boom, like that. And since they're doing that, hopefully Olympic-style drug testing, I guess he's going to find out what he's going to get.
Now, Roger, let's say they get the testing out of the way. Then the major problem will come down to the money. And Floyd's been saying of late that he wants a 60-40 deal. Do you think it'll
right,
be
he posted.
Split? Or do you think it'll be 60-40?
I think it'll be 60-40. Why wouldn't it be? Floyd ain't never lost. Floyd ain't never lost. This mother been knocked out twice. He been knocked out twice when he was 105 pounds. So why would they come to the same agreement about the same amount of money? Boy, they never taste defeat.
Do you think a deal like 60 for the winner, 40 for the loser would get this thing done?
Well, I believe that. I believe that can be possible. I can't see why not. Because if it's based on money, if you start talking about what he accomplished, he ain't no accomplished no more than what Floyd accomplished. Floyd ain't never lost anyway. So the thing of it is coming to agreement. But I'm sure any time a fight that makes that kind of money, they're going to come to an agreement. I can't see why they wouldn't come to an agreement. Wouldn't you think they'd come to agreement?
I would hope so. I hope they do.
With that kind of money, it's almost impossible so them to come for them not to come to some type of agreement.
Yeah, and I'm definitely there with you, Roger. I figure if that much money, neither of these fighters could go in another direction. They couldn't get half what they could fighting each other. There's enough money for both to make it happen.
Oh, and this is the biggest fight. This is the biggest fight. Well, put it this way. The biggest fight in history in boxing today. What was the biggest fight in history of boxing?
It was Mayweather versus De La Hoya.
You understand that, right? Okay, now. Here's a fight that's even bigger than that. Here's a fight bigger than that. So you had to come to an agreement. The only way a person won't come to an agreement for that kind of money is that something is wrong with him or he don't want to take a test. That's it. That's the only reason a person wouldn't come to an agreement. Because all that kind of money on the table, you got to be crazy. Mom, I ain't worried about that. My nephew ain't turning it down.
Oh, yeah.
He take the test. He take the test, and we'll see what he can do.
Roger, we're also joined by my co-host, Jeff Ciani. Jeff?
Hi, Roger. A pleasure to speak with you again, and congratulations on the impressive victory over Mosley. Roger, Jenna mentioned a 60-40 split before, and that reminded me of the deal that Hopkins and Jones had in their rematch clause, where if somebody got knocked out, the winner would get 60%. And I'm wondering if you guys had something like that on the table. Do you think that your nephew can knock Pacquiao out?
Nope. I don't think he can knock him out. He already been knocked out 105 pounds. What you think he can knock him out? He already been knocked out twice anyway. So you don't think my nephew can knock him out? He's been knocked out at 105 pounds. So you don't think my nephew can knock him out at 147?
No, I didn't say that. I think that it's possibly could. I was wondering if you thought he could, because Pacquiao hasn't been knocked out.
I don't think anything. I know he can knock him out, period. If once Pacquiao take that test, he going to get a beating he ain't never had before. Because it ain't nowhere in the world a guy swinging that wild is going to match my nephew, period. My nephew, in this day, in this time, he's the most skilled fighter in the sport of boxing, period.
Now, Roger, in Floyd's last fight against Shane, when we spoke to Emmanuel Stewart on the show, he had mentioned that Shane was lucky that towards the end of the fight that your nephew didn't put together a really nice combination and press the action, because he thinks that Floyd definitely could have stopped Shane in the later rounds of that fight. Do you think that Floyd could have taken Shane out of there? And if so, why do you think he didn't?
It ain't that why he didn't. I mean, obviously, Shane was doing a lot of fucking holding. That's why he didn't get stopped. So when a fighter's holding, that means it's hard to fight somebody that's holding you. And as you look at the fight, as it goes on, boom, he was holding. So since the guy holding, my nephew was pressing him, but still, he would never let my nephew get off. He would get off a few punches, boom, but the first thing he'd do, he'd grab him, hold him. So you ain't never seen him do that with any other fighter. Shane Mosley is an offensive fighter. After he hit my nephew, he never went another round. He never won another round after that. So it ain't about he couldn't stop him. It's that Shane wasn't going to get stopped regardless, because Shane was holding on. And it's hard to fight somebody that's holding you, you know, that are trying to keep from getting knocked out. That's why a lot of guys, when they fought Mike Tyson, they didn't get knocked out because they were holding them. And that's hard to fight somebody that's basically holding you all the time, because you're not trying to get in confrontation.
Now, changing things up a tiny bit here, Roger, when we spoke to your brother Floyd Sr. on the show, we were asking him about different possibilities that exist out there for Floyd in the event that the Pacquiao fight doesn't happen. And the two names that your brother mentioned that would be the only reasonable threats out there, in his view, were Paul Williams and Sergio Martinez. But your brother mentioned that he doesn't like Floyd fighting southpaws.
You know why he don't like Floyd fighting southpaw? because he can't train Floyd for a southpaw. Floyd beat every southpaw out there. Didn't he beat Jab Judah? Didn't he beat Sean Bay Mitchell? Didn't he beat DeMarcus Coley? Huh? Ain't all them world champions? He beat all of them then. Okay, then. It ain't that Floyd can't fight a softball. Floyd whooped four softball world champions in a row. I know because I trained him to fight a softball. And it ain't no different than fighting a right-hander, period. But I would say the fight with Paul Williams don't make sense because it don't make money anyway. He ain't got no name. The whole object to fight on this status and on this level is to fight a fight that makes sense. And the only fight that makes sense is Floyd and Pacquiao. That's the only one that makes sense. I mean, father and mother dude, they make them fight, but they don't got no name. Who gonna come see them?
So does that mean you think what's next for your nephew Floyd is Pacquiao or nothing?
That's what I like to think. I mean, of course he can fight somebody else, but I'm saying, but I like to think that that will be the fight. Complying that Pacquiao do what he's supposed to do and Floyd do what he's supposed to do, why wouldn't the fight go on? The only reason he fought everybody else, he fought Shane, he fought De La Hoya, he fought Ricky Hatton, he fought Mark. Well, hey, then what's the difference in him fighting Floyd if he believes he's that good? You know, I can't see how the fight wouldn't possibly happen. A guy to make that kind of money. I can't see how a fight wouldn't happen.
Now, Roger, in theory, I understand what you just said here about it, the fight having to make sense. But I'm curious, south of the middleweight division, who do you think would be the toughest challenge for Floyd? Is it Pacquiao or is it somebody else?
Yeah, who?
Is it Pacquiao or is it somebody else?
Pacquiao don't threaten Floyd, period, at all. That guy been knocked out 105 pounds. What the hell are you going to do with Floyd? Nothing. He going to get... Listen, it ain't about Floyd fighting Pacquiao. It's about, do Pacquiao want to fight Floyd? It ain't about Floyd. Do Floyd want to fight Pacquiao? Floyd have no problem fighting Pacquiao. Floyd come off almost a two-year layoff and fought the guy he fought a draw with. That's Marquez. Didn't he? Okay. So fighting Pacquiao ain't no big thing. Fighting Pacquiao ain't no big thing because Pacquiao don't got nothing for Floyd anyway. The only thing Pacquiao got for Floyd is one thing. He don't want to take a drug test. So that's all. That tell you about what he got in him. It ain't about, do Floyd want to fight Pacquiao? Who wouldn't want to fight him? Who wouldn't want to fight him? You know? But, hey, but anytime you fight somebody, you want to play on a fair playing field. That's all that is. So if the whole thing is about, it ain't the whole thing about, do Floyd want to fight Pacquiao? Forget about that, because Floyd don't give a damn who he fight, pretty much. Whatever makes sense, whatever make money makes sense. Now, Pacquiao, obviously, is way smarter than Floyd, number one. Number two, he don't got the skills to whoop Floyd anyway. And number two, he don't want to take a test. So all those things that you start talking about do Floyd want to fight Pacquiao or Floyd want to fight this guy, no, you fight the guy who going to give you, gross you the most money. That's what boxing's about. You don't get to this level and say, well, I want to fight that dude over there. You get to a level so that you get contributed by what you do. So if the guy don't take a test, then ain't nobody got to tell you about him. If Pacquiao don't take no drug test, then that'll already tell you about him. You ain't even got to worry about whether him and Floyd going to fight or if they ain't going to fight. If a guy don't take a drug test, then they just tell you. I mean, that's what tests are for. Tests are for to check what's in your body. That's it.
Roger, now I've changed things up a little bit. You have a great historical sense of the sport of boxing. And your nephew had said, you know, previously in interviews that he feels that he's better than Ali, better than Sugar Ray Robinson. In your opinion, where would you rank your nephew all time?
They're all the time. Well, I can't say he's better than Ray Robinson. You know, he got more skill than Ali, period. Remember, Ali don't even throw body shots. So, I mean, Ali's a great, Ali, but I consider Ali the greatest heavyweight. He ain't the greatest fighter. I mean, you got a guy like Ray Leonard is a great fighter. I mean, he got more skill naturally than Muhammad Ali do. My nephew got more skill than Ali do. So, but Ali is still the greatest heavyweight, but he ain't the greatest fighter. And the greatest fighter in my time, in my era, in my, well, I tell you what, the greatest fighter had a record 127-1. That's the greatest fighter, period. And he won 7 world championships. 2 welterweight, 5 middleweight. So who do you think that is?
Yeah, Sugar Ray Robinson. He almost won the light heavyweight championship, too.
All right, then. All right, listen. Amateur, he was 89-0 with 69 knockouts. Who going to break that record? He never got defeated as amateur. So, I mean, I can't say my nephew's a great fighter. You know, my nephew's a great fighter. But, I mean, time and era of boxing has changed since those days. Fighters can only fight damn near once a month now. But back in them days, fighters could fight. They didn't have all these rules that you have now. And so fighters fought constantly, pretty much. That's why fighters back then had more fights than fighters today. You know, A guy 40-0, say he wins 6-7 world championship. Well, Ray Robinson at that time, he had 100-something fights. So you can't compare the time now because it compared to the time then. You had more fighters then than you have now. You know, and everybody, and it was a different time. You had the time with oppression, a time with recession way back then. So. And so everybody was you had more fighters. You just had more fighters then back then anyway compared to what you got now. And you had better fighters then because they fought more often than fighters do today.
Now, Roger, all time, if there was one fighter, you know, in the history of the sport that you could put in there with your nephew, who do you think would give him the most trouble?
I told you. I gave you that the first answer. Sugar Ray Robinson. At Waterweight, Ray Robinson. Ray Robinson. I mean, it's some other guys that give him trouble. I'm not going to say, I'm saying, as far as Waterweight, you got a lot of fight. You got Roberto Duran, will give him problems. You got Sugar Ray Leonard, will give him problems. You got Tommy Hearns, will give him problems. You got Ray Robinson, going to give him. I mean, it ain't just one fighter. That I consider that will give them problems. I mean, you got a lot of great fighters. You got a lot of great fighters from the old days. You remember this. A guy come from featherweight to win the featherweight title, lightweight title, welterweight title, and fight a draw for the middleweight. You know who that is?
Armstrong, right?
All right. Okay, then. So you mean to tell me a guy like Armstrong wouldn't give a guy... give my nephew a problem. Here's a guy went from 26 to middleweight. Have you ever seen a fighter do it today? You ain't never seen a guy from 126 pounds go all the way up to middleweight.
But, yeah, you have seen, you know, with Pacquiao, that he came down from 112-pound champion all the way up to 147. You don't put any historical...
No. He didn't come from 112 to 47. Because they had a catch weight on when he fought. De La Hoya was weighed about 144 pounds. He couldn't make 40. He wouldn't fight De La Hoya at 47. So he ain't never fought them dudes at their weight. He fought Marquez at his weight, but the rest of the guys, he never fought at their weight. He made them come down in weight. And, of course, I can understand why they come down, because they look at him and see how small he is. You know? So that's why. But... He didn't fight De La Hoya at 47. I mean, regardless of that. My name is Paul Delahoy at 54. Now, what do you think more is natural weight, 47 or 54? Remember,
oh, definitely,
Pacquiao actually fought my nephew. Got a catch weight to tell you at what weight you're supposed to come in at. Okay, he didn't fought no Delahoy at no 47 pounds. He fought Delahoy at 45, 44 pounds. That's what he did.
Yeah, but the fight was contracted at 147. It's just that Delahoy.
It made the contract, but he said Delahoy can't come in and weigh in over 145 pounds. That's what he said. So regardless of what the fight was contracted as, we talking about at the weigh-in, that's where Delahoy had to come in. And Delahoy ain't coming at 45. He coming at 44. So anytime a guy tell me he's fighting water weight and you trying to make a guy come down, how are you going to control a guy to come down and weight if you're fighting at 47 anyway? Okay, then.
Yep.
And I already tell you about him then.
He won, and he also beat, you know, Claudie, who was at his belt. I think the only guy he fought at the actual weight was Claudie at 147.
Right. I'm just saying. So, I mean, here's a guy, he's dictating the weight you're going to come in at. If you're fighting 47 and you're the 47-pound champion, all the guy got to come in at weighing at 47. After that, it doesn't make no difference at what weight he weighs. I mean, he had a decent win over Claudia, too, though. I mean, for a guy that... I give him credit for a guy come from that smaller weight doing what he do. I mean, I know how he do it, but still.
Well, to change things up again and change it back to Floyd, I mean, we talked to his father, and his father said that if he fights Pacquiao, he feels it should be the last fight of Floyd Jr.'s career. Do you think that should be the case?
Well, I mean, I can't make a judgment on a fighter decide what he's gonna do. I mean, if it beat Pacquiao, boom, truly, where else can you go? But still, at the same time, I can't say, you need to retire. He has to make that up in his mind that he needs to retire, you know, because I can't say, well, you know, you need to retire because you ain't good as you was, you know. But that's why he took that time off, because Floyd's been boxing all his life. All his life he's been boxing. So pretty much, so I can't say, well, you know what, you know, after you whip Pacquiao, boom. And if I would have said that, that's like telling Ray Leonard he needs to quit after he found out he had a detached retina and was laid off 5.5 years. But what did he come back and do?
Came back and he beat Hagler.
All right, then. So for me to tell somebody what you can do and what you should, I could say what you should do. I could say what you should do because he's already accomplished more things than most fighters going to ever accomplish. But I can't say, listen, you need to quit. No, I can't say you need to quit because that's a choice amongst a fighter. A fighter, I mean, I can have an opinion, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to do it, you know. But, I mean, if he walk away from the sport undefeated, and if him and Shane Mosley would have fought for that other title, Floyd would have 7 world championships today. I mean, but he accomplished all the things that he ever wanted to accomplish in boxing. So, I mean, if you get the money, you get the prestige, you recognize as one of the greatest fighters ever, then, hey, what else can you do? You can't get no bigger than that. But remember, fighters have egos. And that's why most time they wind up staying around too long because it's that ego and it's that money, you see. Anytime you make the kind of money that they make on that level, then, hey, it's hard to walk away from What would you do?
What would you? It's a sport where you can, you know, make millions of dollars for 48 minutes of work. So obviously, it's very alluring to come back to it.
Okay, so that's why most fighters come back. That's why they all come back. And generally, when they come back, that's why most of them wind up. I mean, the greatest record in boxing was Ray Robinson. He was 127-1, you know. But, he came back. I mean, so I most fighters. I mean, I don't think fighters come back fighters don't come back so much because of the money. Fighters come back because the love for what they do. I know because I'm a fighter. So I know even when I came back, it wasn't so much about money. It's something that I wanted to accomplish. I just feel like I didn't do all I can do. I just thought that way. You know what I'm saying? Even though you're older, you may be smarter, but I just didn't think that I did all I can do, and so that's why I came back. But then you got to understand, the old heavyweight champion of the world came back off a 20-year layoff, right?
Yeah, George Foreman came back after a long layoff.
Yeah, you see how much money he made, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, guy laid off 18 years. That's a long layoff to be away from a sport that you was good at. And came back, become the oldest heavyweight champion of the world. So it's all about what you believe. Only if he would have told me I'm gonna come back at 40-something years old, I said, man, you probably need to sit down. That's what I would have told him. You see, but remember, I don't know him better than he knows himself. So obviously, I would have been wrong. He made more money now coming back than he did when he was fighting in the 70s. I couldn't make the call.
You know, speaking of fighters that take a long period of time to come back for the money or for the glory of it, there's been a lot of rumors lately of Mike Tyson training, getting in the gym, dropping 50 pounds. Do you think it's a good idea for him to try to re-enter the sport?
Nope. See, why I say that is because George Foreman is probably live a different kind of lifestyle. Put it that way. Probably a different kind of lifestyle. So when George Foreman came back, George Foreman was 300-plus pounds. He dropped that weight. He dedicated himself. Boom. And he believed in the man up above. And, he went out there and he made people believe what they didn't think that he can do. But he stayed faithful to himself. And, it's basically on how your lifestyle, how you live. That's all it is. How you live. You know, if Mike Tyson live right, be clean like that, he probably can come back. You know, but George Foreman proved it can be done. He proved it can be done. So it ain't like it can't be done. George Foreman just proved it can be done at his age.
Roger, with Floyd in his next fight, if Pacquiao doesn't happen, this is something my co-host brought up, who out there do you think is the best viable option? You know what you say, if it makes money, it makes sense. But who's out there for him?
Well, that's hard to say. If I was him, I would fight Cotto. You know why? You know why I fight Cotto? Only simply because one reason. Pacquiao whooped Cotto, right?
Yep.
Cotto had a win over Shane Mosley, even though the fight was very close. But regardless of that, I would fight Cotto simply because then people would say, hey, well, why don't he fight the guy? Why don't he fight Mayweather? That's the only fight. To anybody else, and looking at boxing, that's the only fight that makes sense anyway. That's the only fight that makes sense. Pacquiao and Floyd. That's the only fight that makes sense. You know? And if the fight don't happen, it's going to be simply because of one reason. Pacquiao don't want to fight. And the reason why he don't want to fight. That's it. And I've already told you why that reason is. How is a guy gonna turn down $50 million? That don't even make sense. Would you turn down $50 million?
No.
All right. Well, I gotta be a fool to turn it down too. So if the fight don't happen, it's gonna be the reason why the fight don't happen. It sure ain't because Floyd don't want to fight. I mean, why wouldn't he fight him? You know, so that's the only thing that makes sense. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Now, Roger, in the sport here, you know, you've been a fighter, you've been a trainer. Is there any advice you can give out to young upcoming fighters that can help them try to have the success that a Floyd, you know, Floyd Jr.?
Well, I train young kids. I don't just train Floyd. People think I just, I train Floyd. People think I just train for them. But I train the guy, the number one contender, too. The number one guy who just fought on Floyd Carr, Saeed Wally, I trained him, too. Floyd Undercar, there was a kid named Saeed Wally. Saeed from Belgium. That's where he's from. I trained him, boom. And I trained Jesse Vargas. So, I mean, I trained Jesse Vargas like when he was 8 years old. So I'm used to training kids. I'm used to training kids because that's how I started. That's how I started myself, you know, boxing, then training. So, yeah, but the main thing with a kid, the first thing I would tell them is that, number one, if you're gonna enter boxing, you need to do some road work. That means you need to get yourself in shape before. Then after getting yourself in shape, get somebody to teach you the art of boxing. Teach you the art of boxing. When I say teach you the art about boxing, when you teach the art about boxing, it ain't about just throwing a bunch of punches, because that don't mean nothing. It's about offense and defense and learning how to move your head. That's number one. When you get that, then everything else will come as you go. The more you stay in the gym, the more you won't adapt to it. And it's going to be much more easier for you. So that's what I would tell a child, because I train kids. I train kids when they're 7, 8 years old. So, that's what I would tell them. And then, teaching them the art, teaching them how to, when I say teaching them the art, I mean teaching them the balance. How to stand, how to turn, how to roll, how to catch, like that. Because that's all part of boxing. And that's number one. That's what I would say.
Roger, I wanted to change things up a tiny bit, Roger. And I'm curious if you've been following the Super 6 tournament well, and what do you think of that? What are your impressions on that after two rounds?
I've seen it. I trained one of the kids that was in there. I trained Andre Durrell. I trained Durrell. But the guy I think who I believe will win, who I think will win that I've seen, is the kid from California. He's an Olympic gold medalist.
Now, do you think, you mentioned before how you need to be taught offense and defense, and I'm wondering on Andre Ward with regards to the tournament and how impressive he's looked so far, as you mentioned, former gold medalist.
Yeah.
Do you think he has the potential to be a future superstar in the sport on the level of, say, your nephew?
Well, being a superstar, it all depends on style, what people like about your style, what people like about what makes a superstar. It ain't about so much, okay, you take Marvin Hagler. Marvin Hagler wasn't a superstar until he beat dudes like John McGarvey and Roberto Duran. He wasn't a superstar. You got the Waterway was bigger than him. Roberto Duran was bigger than him. Sugar Ray Leonard was bigger than him. Tommy Hearn was bigger than him. Until he fought those guys, he became a superstar. Even though all the great fights that he had before then, it didn't recognize him as a superstar. But when he started fighting those guys, he became a superstar. So, when you start talking about being a superstar, you have to do something that obviously that catch people's eyes. And I think that's basically what makes a superstar. He's got to be something different that he brings to the game that somebody else don't bring. So, I looked at the Super Six when I seen it. Andre Ward was one of the better fighters in it. I'm not saying the other fighters wasn't good. I'm just saying Andre Ward was one of the better fighters in the Super Six tournament. Andre Durrell was good too, but I thought he was a better performer. Not because he won it. I ain't had nothing to do with him winning. It's just that he had the guts, the balls to get in there and do what he needed to do. So from what I've seen, I haven't seen fights lately, but when I seen him, I had never seen him, but I just seen him on the day he fought. And I looked at him. I heard about him, but I never knew anything about him. But when I looked at him, he's a well-schooled fighter.
All right. Well, Roger, one final question. You're in the sport. Is there any fighter you see out there that you would see being the next superstar?
Well, what I see today is Andre Ward could possibly be a superstar. He's a good fighter. And he ain't charismatic, though. That has a lot to do with boxing. You have to bring something to the table that, somebody think you got, whether it be charm, whether it be a certain look. Whether it be cocky, like that. You have to bring something to the table that's different from everybody else. And there are only a few guys can do that. Tyson did it. Tyson did it. Ali did it. You got some other guys that did it. Ray Leonard did it. You got some other guys can do it. But that has a fix on people, how people want to watch you fight. People want to watch you fight. You got to make them want to watch you. Delaware had it. So basically, the next guy is going to have that kind of charisma in order for people to say, oh, he's going to be the next boxing superstar.
Well, Roger, it was an absolute pleasure speaking to you again. It's a great interview, and we thank you again for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Great. Right. Thank you very much, Roger.
All right. Be good. Take care.
Roger Mayweather, everyone. What more can you say? This guy, he knows boxing. He knows the history of boxing. He's been a fighter. He's been a trainer. He's experienced it all. He's taken his nephew all the way to being the top pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Tommy, what do you think of the interview?
Today, he's definitely one of the more knowledgeable trainers when it comes to the rich history of the sport. And I have to applaud you, Jenna. You did fairly well when you got quizzed there a couple times by Roger. I think you passed with flying colors on some of the questions he asked you there. But that being said, I thought it was a great interview. I thought it was great to get another opportunity to speak to Roger here on the ropes. And I definitely enjoyed listening to what he had to say and thought he had some very interesting things to say. And, call me a little bit of an optimist, if you will, but reading between the lines, I'm almost getting the impression, or perhaps this is just wishful thinking and I'm hoping, but I'm getting the impression that everybody involved understands that Floyd versus Pacquiao is the only real option out there for either fighter. I've been saying it on this show for weeks, if not months now, Jenna, that if that fight does come to fruition and it does happen, that that will be the absolute best thing that could happen for boxing. And on the flip side, if that fight doesn't happen, I think that's probably about the worst thing that can happen for boxing right now. But based on the stuff that Roger was just saying to us, I think that, you know, I'm getting a good impression about the whole thing, and I'm getting hopeful that sometime in the near future, maybe, that we will hear something definitive about that fight actually becoming a reality. But that being said, it was a great pleasure to speak to Roger, and I for one, really appreciated what he had to say and his unique insight and perspective on things. I thought it was a great interview.
Yeah, it's always fun interviewing Roger because he really does keep you on your toes. He keeps you paying attention there, and he certainly does quiz you. But, you know, it was fun talking to him, and I, you know, he knows. He knows the biggest fight in boxing that can be made is Floyd versus Pac. He ain't hiding it, like you said. And, you know what, we all hope that can happen, but let's come to the realization, though, that it doesn't. I mean, that's what a lot of fight fans are saying now. I mean, you know, they don't think it'll happen this year. It's something that, you know, you say it's going to hurt boxing, and it will hurt a little bit, but, you know, boxing does have to move on. A lot of times in history, matches don't get made. Let's talk about options for both these guys if they don't fight each other. And to be honest, between the both of them, between Mayweather and between Pacquiao, the one that actually has the better options is actually Pacquiao, because Pacquiao, you know, obviously he can, you know, he can sell a fight. He sold Dallas Cowboy Stadium with Joseph Claudi quite well. If he does not fight Pacquiao, that's where his next fight will be. It'll be November 13th. But let's look at his options. You know, he has the option of fighting a rematch with Juan Manuel Marquez. Marquez has his own matchup right now he has to take care of on July 31st against Juan Diaz. I suspect he'll win that fight. That fight will be taking place at 140. So, you know, Pacquiao might come back down to 140, take that rematch. That's an interesting one. And also there's other fights like a rematch with Miguel Cotto. Now, you know, with Miguel looked at 154 pounds, that fight is still it's a little bit intriguing. And people have also been mentioning possibly Antonio Margarito. Now, if you look at Floyd Mayweather Jr., his options are more limited. He can't fight Miguel Cotto because he's with Arum. Obviously, Mayweather has a large history with Arum. He doesn't want to make deals with Arum fighters. That's kind of a roadblock. I mean, I don't think that fight will happen. Our guest that we had earlier on the show, Timothy Bradley, he looks like an option that Mayweather would probably have to take. I mean, there's just not as much out there for Mayweather as there is for Pacquiao. I'm going to go over to you, Rummy. I mean, what are your thoughts on all this? And, I mean, do you think – who do you think has the better options?
I'm not sure who has the better options, but it's interesting you bring this up because I actually had a conversation with some friends yesterday at a 4th of July barbecue about the whole Pacquiao-Mayweather situation and about what fights are out there for both fighters in the event that they can't come to terms again, which, as I mentioned, would be horrific for the sport. But the one agreement that me and a couple of my friends came to after some deliberation was that for Pacquiao, I don't think anybody wants to see the third fight with Juan Manuel Marquez, even though they had two very close fights. I personally thought Pacquiao edged it out the first time, and I actually thought Marquez edged out the rematch. Of course, the official results were a draw the first time in a round and a close decision for Pacquiao in the rematch. I don't think that fight has much interest now because I just think that Pacquiao has grown bigger than that, and I think that in a sense, even though their two fights were so close, I think it's a step backwards. As for Antonio Margarito, to quote something Emmanuel Stewart said on a show not too long ago here with us, and I'm paraphrasing here, Margarito probably isn't deserving of a shot against one of these elite name fighters until he's, you know, proven himself and worked his way back up the rankings, especially after he was caught with the illegal substances inside his glove before the Mosley fight. I know he's obviously fought once since then, but I don't think that he's really deserving of a fight. And that leaves the third option that you mentioned there, Jenna, a rematch with Miguel Cotto. And after a lot of persuasion by me, I got a couple of my friends who at first were saying, what's the point? Pacquiao kicked his ass last time. He'll probably do it again. I was able to somewhat reluctantly get them to agree that if the Mayweather fight cannot be made, I really think that the rematch with Cotto is probably his most feasible option. A, it would be a quick, it would be an opportunity for him to win a belt in an unprecedented eighth weight class to get Cotto's 154-pound title. And B, I think that the fight with Emmanuel Stewart in his corner now and at the higher weight, considering how competitive their first fight was and considering some of the vast improvements we've seen in Cotto already in his very short time working with Emmanuel, I really think that's the best option out there for him. And I do think that Pacquiao would still win, albeit in a closer fight. But if he can't get the Floyd fight, I think that's still the biggest fight that could be made for him out there. And I know that a lot of fans might be hesitant to see that, but I really don't think that there's much of a better option for Pacquiao than that should the Mayweather fight and the negotiations fall apart. As for Floyd, you mentioned Timothy Bradley. That's definitely a viable option for him. And as I said to Roger earlier, the two fights that and Floyd Sr. had mentioned, the two fights that I'd be interested in seeing Floyd in, they might not make a lot of sense. I know Roger said that Paul Williams isn't a fight that would bring a lot of money to the table, and he's probably right on that. So I don't know if these would make sense, but from my perspective, from a fan's perspective, if Floyd's not going to fight Pacquiao, and that really is the only fight I'd really want to see him in, but if I had to choose an opponent or two after that, and Floyd was definitely fighting, he had to fight somebody, I would say Paul Williams or Sergio Martinez would be the most interesting matchups. They're both southpaws. They're both naturally bigger guys. They're both tough fighters, and I think that they could push Floyd a little bit. And as a fan, if there's one thing the Mosley fight taught me with Mayweather, it's that Mayweather has more dimensions to his game than he may have let on, and he may even be greater, if that's possible, than we realize to a large extent. I'd very much like to see Mayweather in a fight where he's pushed to the limits, and I don't know that Martinez or Paul Williams could necessarily push him that far, but I think they could push him further than most, and those would be two fights I'd be interested in to see Floyd with.
All right, well, that is pretty interesting, too, and you also bring up Sergio Martinez, and that's something you brought up briefly with Roger Mayweather. To be honest, though, that's a fight I don't think he'll take either, to be honest. I mean, if you're looking at Mayweather and who he will fight, it probably would be someone like Timothy Bradley, a smaller guy coming up, a guy like that, because I just don't know if he would want it. He wouldn't take up Paul Williams. Paul Williams really does bring up into the table, to be honest. I mean, he has no title belt. You know, at this point, it's not a matchup for him. As we mentioned, Cotto, obviously, he can't fight. So it would be a disappointment if the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight doesn't happen, because the options do look a little bit bleak. But would you say, Rummy, out of the two guys, that Pacquiao has the better options because he has more fights that are makeable?
I guess I could agree to that. I mean, I think it's really tough to say, because outside of Floyd, I do believe that Cotto's his best option. And as I already alluded to, although that's the fight I'd most want to see Pacquiao in if a fight with Floyd doesn't happen, I do think that Pacquiao would win again. I do think, you know, he already beat him, even though Cotto's now with Emmanuel Stewart, and he seems to be making improvements, and I think 9 pounds north of where they last fought could make a difference. I only think there's so much Emmanuel can do, and I only think there's so much the 9 added pounds will do. You know, if it comes to racehorses, I just think that Freddie Roach has the better horse here, and that no matter what the terms or circumstances are, I expect Pacquiao to win again. I think most fans would probably agree with me on that. And if that's his other best option, I think it actually might be a stretch to say that he has more options, Jenna. I'm not sure that it's necessarily true. I think what would be true and accurate to say is that neither one of them really has a strong option if they don't fight each other. They might have options, and maybe Pacquiao does have more options, but I don't think any of them are strong options.
All right, well, it'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds. I mean, that's what, you know, in the next coming months, that's what you're going to find out, is who they're going to fight. I don't believe Mayweather, when he says he's going to take another 1 to 2 years off the sport, he will fight somebody. And I think after these upcoming fights with Marquez and with Bradley, after July, somewhere in August, we're going to hear from those guys, and there'll be a decision made on who they're going to fight next. And I honestly don't believe it'll be each other, but I really hope it is. I hope they do what's right for the sport and they do get in the ring and they make that fight, because that's what all fans want. We all want to see that mega matchup, and hopefully it can happen. But anyways, change things up. There are some upcoming fights this weekend. Last week was pretty dismal, especially the TV schedule and the fights that were out there. This week, boxing comes back in a big way. First, you have Showbox on Friday. You'll have former OTR guest Antoine Smith against Leonardo Tyler. And also, you'll have Mike Jones versus Arvin Garcia. Those are Showbox, but the main fight is on Saturday. That would be Juan Manuel Lopez against Barnaby Concepcion. Now, this fight is interesting in a sense, not just because of the fight itself. Concepcion has a loss against Lenevino, a disqualification, and his only title fight loss. He's going to pose a little bit of a threat to Lopez, but not too much. The main thing that this fight sets up, though, it sets up a huge fight with Rafael Marquez if Lopez wins. And that's what we're hoping to see here, because I'd love to see that matchup. Lopez versus Marquez would be an excellent matchup on paper, but he has some work to do here. Like I said, Concepcion is, you know, he's no slouch. He's fought some good fights. His only loss, not his only loss, but his only title loss was to Lenevino, and that was a fight where he was disqualified. The belt that Lopez has is for Lenevino, and, you know, it's just, on paper, it's a decent matchup. I'm going to go to you, Rumi. What do you think about it?
You know, my initial thoughts here are that, you're right, Concepcion, he should be able to push Lopez a little bit. My initial thoughts are that Lopez is a little too young, a little too hungry, a little too skilled, and ultimately he should prove to be a little too much. But I can't easily forget that it wasn't that long ago when Rogers Mataguá actually put up a much better fight, especially in the later rounds against Juan Manuel Lopez, than I would have anticipated. So, as you said, it's probably not the give-me fight that everybody thinks, and it's probably going to be a good test. I think it's a safe fight for Lopez. It's definitely a fight I'm very much looking forward to seeing. And you're right, Jenna. Hopefully with this comes a victory for Lopez. And, the fight in that weight range, I think now, that does make the most sense, and you already mentioned it, would be Rafael Marquez and Juan Manuel Lopez squaring off against each other. I think that would be a great fight. I think that it would have something similar in the makings to the fights that Marquez and Vasquez had together, notwithstanding their last fight where Israel Vasquez's eyes were ready to explode after getting hit only a few times. But going back to their original three fights and what was one of the best trilogies at that time before the fourth fight that we've seen in recent years or perhaps ever, I think that Juan Manuel Lopez maybe the type of fighter to give Marquez that same kind of fight. And the only thing different might be that Lopez has in his favor is he's younger and a little fresher, and he's not as battle-worn. So ultimately, that is something I'd like to see. So I do kind of hope that Lopez passes this test on Showtime this weekend, and I hope that it does lead to something like that down the future. But you can't look past these guys. And Juan Manuel Lopez, he's still improving, I think. He's got tremendous pedigree and good skills. But, you know, there's a difference between being anointed the next great thing and going out there proving it and actually doing it. So I've always been interested in following Lopez and watching his career unfold and seeing if he fulfills his potential and develops into the type of fighter that many people believe he will become. And this is another step in the road for him, and will be interesting to see how he fares and if he's successful, if he could go on for bigger and better things.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's a good test for him. It's his second fight at 126 pounds. So, you know what? If he takes it easy again, he could have, like you said, another Rogers Mataguá type of situation here. But he's got a big fight waiting on the table for him, so I think he'll take care of business here. I think he's 100% serious, and I think he'll take care of business. I think he'll probably win by late stoppage. That's how I'm predicting it here. Now, besides this fight, there's actually another fight on undercard, and that would be with Nino Darnaire. He'll be fighting Herman Marquez. Now, Marquez I've seen before. If you look at his record, it's 27-1. To be honest, not very impressive. If you look at who he's fought, his only guy that he really fought that actually had any some real skills, he lost to in his last bout. I think this will be an easy fight for Darnaire. Darnaire is just, he's just tearing it up of late. I mean, he's won every darn fight that he's fought since he fought Darchinian and upset him. And I hope that he wins this fight and it sets up that rematch that we all want to see, is Darnay versus Darchinian again. I'm going to go to you, Rummy, quickly. What do you think on this matchup?
I don't really have much to add. I think that Donaire is going to win, and you and I have both said it time and time again on this show that Darchinian and him got to get it on again. That's the fight that makes sense in that area. That's the fight that I think will create a lot of buzz in that area. I mean, Donaire has been fighting guys as of late that I think are a little overmatched. I think Hernan Marquez represents that same trend we've seen from him recently. And I just want to see him and Darchinian get it on again. I do think that Vic Darchinian has regressed a little bit since his awesome streak where he seemed to really establish and discover his jab and use it effectively to open up his power punches. It seems to me that in recent fights he's reverted back to a more of a looking for a one shot to get a guy out of there kind of mentality. But as for Donaire's fight this weekend, I fully expect him to win. I don't expect it to be even a difficult test for him in all actuality. And in a similar light, I just hope it does pave the way to that rematch with Darchinian again, because I think that's the most interesting fight out there for him.
Yeah, I see him winning this fight quite easily, to be honest. Somewhere around a mid-round stoppage, around sixth round. I think Marquez is completely out of his caliber. I don't think he's in anywhere near Donaire's territory, and it's going to be an easy fight for him. But anyways, guys, for all you people listening out there, if you want a little bit more from On the Ropes, you can go to www.ontheropesboxingradio.com. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I'd like to thank all of our guests that we had on today. We obviously had Timothy Bradley, Roger Mayweather. They're both great, great guests. And, of course, I'd like to thank my co-host, Rummy. You did an excellent job. I don't think you showed too many after effects from July 4th, so I was pleased you were able to join me here. And, you know what? All the fans listening out there, catch us next time. Hopefully we'll have a pretty good show for you. Catch you next time.